All right, here we go. My name's Jeff Kay, and you're listening to episode 154 of the world-famous West Virginia Surf Report podcast. How it goes up, boys and girls. I hope it goes well. I can't complain. I can't complain about the way it goes. It goes well. Today I want to tell you a story about something that happened many, many years ago. Back in the 80s, in fact. Back when I still lived with my parents. So this is a million years ago. It's a story that I don't think I've ever told at the podcast. I've definitely written about it at the website a couple times. But I don't think I talked about it on the podcast. Not one of those things that I find to be particularly funny. You know, I mean, there's an absurd element to it. That, there's definitely some humor in the absurdity of it all. And there, you know, lots of time has passed, so I could, you know, I can laugh about it too. But, when I was going through it, mister, not funny at all. Not at all. It was a dark period of my life. So it starts, like I said, in the 80s. I was dating this girl named Kelly. We'd been together since high school. And it felt like we were almost like a married couple at this point. We'd been together for several years, you know, and we were, we had a rhythm to our lives. We, you know, every spare moment we were together, and we, you know, there's stuff that we, you know, we had rituals, you know, just like a married couple, you know. I mean, we spent all our time together, and I, as far as I could tell, everything was fine. Everything was cool. We enjoyed each other's company, and we were chugging along. The problem with me is I was adrift in my life. I had no path forward. I'd dropped out of college at least once at this point. It would ultimately be twice. I can't remember. I mean, I don't know the timeline, but I'd either dropped out once or I'd dropped out twice, all right? I was working at this shit grocery store, and it called Fast Check, where they paid me $3.35 an hour, which was the minimum that the government would allow. Definitely, with 100% certainty, they would have paid me less if they'd have been allowed to. But as it was, I'd work 40 hours. It was a full-time job. I worked 40 hours, and my take-home pay, $106. You know, after deductions and stuff, whatever they take out, I'd take home just a little over $100 for a 40-hour week. Man, I was knocking it out of the park. You know, I was setting the world on fire, right? So, I was working there. She and I were together, and she was powering through college. That was another source of anxiety for me. I was adrift. I was probably drinking too much. In fact, I don't know why I even said probably. Definitely drinking too much. I didn't know what I was doing. I was panicked all the time, you know. And like adulting, you know, when you're in school, you know, there's, you know, society tells you what you're going to do. And once it's up to you, it's like, oh my God, you know, this sucks. I don't know what I'm going to do or how to do it or how to get there. I don't know. But she graduated high school, went straight into college. She wanted to be a school teacher. She was powering through. She was right on. She had her whole life tracked. And I had nothing. I mean, I was adrift. But, you know, we were still together, and everything seemed fine on that side of things. But one day she calls me, or she comes over, or whatever. I don't remember. I don't even remember how it happened. And she told me that she didn't want to do it anymore, you know. She broke up with me, and I'd never, you know, she was my first girlfriend, and I'd never gone through that before, not really, you know, definitely not to this extent. And I was plunged, I mean, I was already teetering, you know, but this plunged me into a black despair. To the point, I mean, I didn't even realize that this level of sadness existed. I mean, I was like probably clinically depressed, you know. I mean, I was just, I couldn't get out of bed. I was just a disaster, you know. I wouldn't even take a shower. I would just lay in bed all day. My parents are like, what are you doing? You have to live your life. I wasn't going to work. I wasn't showing up at work. I wouldn't even call them. I just wouldn't go, you know, which was not like me. And I was depressed. I mean, I was crushed, smashed down like some spent cigarette butt underneath the heel of a fat man. And, I mean, it was just, terrible, you know. So now, you know, every once in a while, the fog would lift and be like, oh, shit, now I don't have a job on top of everything else. And this is an era when there were no jobs. Even if you had a minimum wage shit job where they called you numb nuts and shit for brains, which is the one I had, you know, you protected it, you know, because there wasn't any others. It's not like today where you get fired at one place, walk across the street and get another job paying more. It's not like that. You couldn't find jobs at all. There weren't any, you know. So the fact that I, you know, pissed away this one was, you know, eh. So now I was even in a worse situation, right? So I was like, what am I going to do? You know, my parents are like saying the same thing. What are you going to do? What in the hell's going on? So I was looking in the paper, looking for a job, and, you know, still in mourning, but I had to find a job. One day there was one in there listed. It said something about sales, no experience necessary, large earning possibilities or whatever. So I called them, you know. I didn't know. It was very vague, but I called. There's a number. Left a message, and whatever I said, I can't remember. It was utter horseshit, whatever I left. So I thought, I'll never hear from them, you know, because, I mean, people wouldn't call you back, you know. If they were, most places weren't even taking applications. In fact, it was so bad, there were all these businesses on their front and on the door, they would have a sign that says not accepting applications, because people come in there all the time asking for applications, you know. So I thought, I never hear from them. But an hour later, I got a call. Some woman, and she goes, hey, got your message. Would you like to come over to talk about it? I'm like, huh, this is crazy. I said, yeah, absolutely. The place was in Dunbar, which was unusual. Usually the businesses were all up in Charleston. But Dunbar's were the town, the little suburb town that I lived in. And I said, hell yeah. So I go over there. I don't have no idea what it is. And I talked to the woman. She seemed normal. I guess she was the office manager or something. Not clear. And she told me that it's a company that sells premium meats and seafoods, right? In a door-to-door situation. I'm like, immediately, I'm like, I don't know about this, right? But what else am I going to do? I said, okay. I mean, I'm not a salesman, you know, I've never done that. And my personality is not really conducive for that kind of work. But what options do I have? So she goes, well, you'll go through a training period. We'll send you out with one of our best guys, and he'll show you how it's done. There's a $100 deposit on the truck for use of the truck in case there's some kind of damage or something. I said, I gotta pay you $100 to work here. No, it's a deposit. Don't think of it that way. It's a deposit. You'll get it back at the end if you leave. And I was like, there's red flags flying up all over the place. I said, okay. And, you know, there's other things that you'll learn about. There's a three case minimum, or, you know, a quota. You got to sell, you know, after you've been here a while, you'll have to, there's a three cases you have to buy, you know, required to sell each day. And she just skirted right over that. And, you know, you buy your own gas. We don't provide gas. You buy your own gas. And I was like, all right, whatever. You know, I'm like, man, you could have told me anything. I was just like barely listening because I'm like thinking about Kelly the whole time. That was a disgusting, you know, just a miserable wallowing in sadness. I don't know. When I think back on it, I'm like, God, you know. So anyway, I said, she goes, so you want to give it a shot? I said, hell yeah. you know, what, I mean, what other options do I have? So I go out with this guy the next day. It's like, we have to be there at like 7 in the morning, some ungodly hour. It might have even been 6. I don't know. It feels like it was 7. So we go over there. We meet at this place. And we have to line up at the beginning like it's some kind of military thing. And this guy pulls up in this weird car. It's a car that's a car like I've never seen before. And it wasn't made. It wasn't made in any of the car making countries. It definitely wasn't American. It wasn't German or Swedish or anything like that. I think it was like something from like behind the Iron Curtain, you know, like Yugoslavia or Czechoslovakia or something. It was a weird car. I've never seen that. It's a bizarre thing. He pulls up, right? And he comes in there, and we're lined up shoulder to shoulder in there. I don't know, there's like maybe 10 or 12 of us. And he comes in there and gives us this pep talk, right? And I throw air quotes up around that because it was more of a, like, it had a threatening tone. And I'm standing there like, who is it? I guess he's the owner of the company. It's like, who is this guy? You know, you could tell he was like, I mean, he was a sleazy sumbitch, you know? I mean, you could tell that this guy had probably spent his entire adult life, like, just, you know, moving from town to town, setting up these questionable situations, you know, barely on the side of legal, you know? He's probably, who knows, he'd probably been in prison, you know? I mean, there was a sleaziness factor to this guy. He was threatening us, you know, like veiled threats. And it was couched in a, all right, guys, let's go out there and, you know, take on the world and all this stuff. So he asks who I am, and I tell him, and he's like grunts, like little interest. And he tells me that there, you know, he pulls this guy. He goes, this guy right here, you know, he's just like you. There's no difference between it. We're all the same. He's going to make $45,000 a year at this job. He tells me this. He tells us all this. And I'm like, $45,000. I mean, that, you may as well say $5 million. I mean, $12,000 would have blown my mind. $45,000? I mean, it sounds like a millionaire. And I was like, holy shit. And I was thinking, after the fact, I wonder if that guy was even a salesman. I think he was a ringer. I think I don't even know if that guy went out and sold. I think he was probably like part owner or something. It was one of these stories because there was nothing, you know, the guy was, there's nothing truthful about anything. So, I don't know. So the guy was like, you know, there's a sleaziness. So, but anyway, what choices do I have? I mean, I don't have any choices. So I go out with this guy. And he's all right. He showed me the ropes. You know, he said, he goes, what you need to do is he says, what you need to do is you need to have repeat customers, right? You need to build it up to the point where you have repeat customers where you basically, it's just like a route. It's not really like selling. It's just you're servicing a route. He goes, you know, you'll have a whole bunch of people, if you're lucky, if you play your cards right, where you just go visit these same people over and over again, and you make your quotas, and you don't really have to work for it. You're just like, you know, delivering stuff to people. He goes, but at the beginning, you're going to have to knock on doors, and there's a good chance you'll have to always do that a little bit, but you can lessen it, and you have to use this script. You know, there's a script that you're supposed to use when you knock on the doors, when you're just doing cold calls. I was like, a script? He goes, yeah, I'll show you. Just tag along. So we go knock on somebody's door, and he goes, hey, I'm delivering some meat to a grocery store down the way here, and you never believe what happened. Woo, brother. They double, the idiots back at the warehouse, they double stocked my truck. So I was wondering if you maybe we could like share in the in this good fortune, and I could sell you some of this stuff at a real good price. I was like, what the shit's this? what is this lie? This blatant lie, you know? He goes, he's like, yeah, they double stock. I got all this extra meat on the truck, you know? I can sell it to you. I mean, I can sell this stuff to you if you want, you know, if you're interested. A really good price, you know? I was like, I don't know. That's not a very good story, you know? What kind of warehouse doesn't keep track? I mean, that shit would come back to haunt you. I mean, you're out there. So the company you work for, right, you're basically selling their meat, you know, and you think it's not going to get, just because it's on your truck by mistake, you think that's never going to be tracked back to you? I mean, this doesn't make any sense. There's like huge holes in the story. Plus, it's just a straight up lie. You know, I'm not making any deliveries. But anyway, I said, I don't like, he goes, that's what we're supposed to do. So that's what he did. We went to every house we went to. Hey, you never believe what these idiots did back at the warehouse. And some people would buy. He sold, I mean, with ease, you know. He sold his quota. He had to have 3 cartons. And when I say cartons, these are big boxes of meat. I mean, steaks, you know. And they're in plastic. They're like vacuum sealed. I mean, this is quality stuff. They didn't sell garbage. I mean, it was high quality stuff. And, you know, it's like 12 ribeye steaks in this box. And it was expensive. I don't remember. It seemed like it was like, some of that stuff was like $90 for a box. And this is in the 80s, you know. It's a long time ago. So it'd be like, our cost would be 63. We'd sell it for 89 or something. But you could sell it for whatever you wanted. But if you sold a case, you had to pay the company 63. So if you sold it for 89, you kept the difference, right? That's the way it worked. And you had to sell 3 a day. I said, what's the story with this 3 a day thing? He goes, oh, if you don't make your quota, you have to buy. I said, pardon? He goes, no, yeah, if the quota's 3 and you only sell 1, you have to buy 2 cartons yourself to make up. I said, what the hell's that? He goes, it's easy. It's easy to make your quota. Don't worry about it. I said, I don't like that at all. He goes, that's the way it works. So, I don't know. He was out there. But, you know, he'd stop. He'd like, hey, look at that store over there. I want to go check that out. So he would go run and check out some store. So he was like making it, you know. He was not supervised. He was just out there making his own rules, you know. I like that part of it. Like out there by yourself, making your own rules, you know. He worked hard. I mean, we put in a long day that day. And he sold maybe like 5 cartons of stuff throughout the day. He made some good, you know, what I thought was good money. And I thought, well, this might not be too bad, you know. Can't see myself doing this very long. But, yeah, it might not be too bad. So after my brief little training thing, I took off in my own truck, which a manual transmission, by the way. Never drove one of those before. That was no issue. I learned how to do that real fast. And I went over there for that early morning pep talk. And one day I was in there early on. I mean, all of it was early on because I didn't last very long. But maybe the second or third time I was over there, the guy goes, he goes, why are you coming in here dressed that way? You know, you're supposed to be a warehouse worker. You're supposed to be delivering meat, making deliveries. You're dressed like some kind of fucking choir boy. I was like, what? Choir. I mean, I had like a dress shirt on. It wasn't tucked. It was untucked. It was like a button-up shirt. And he said I looked like a, quote, fucking choir boy. I was like, he goes, dress like a, put on a t-shirt, look like you're working in a warehouse, you know. I was like, this is quite a pep talk, you know. It was Czechoslovakian car. Thing probably ran on coal or something. I don't know what the hell. It's like the weirdest thing I've ever seen. This guy's like, you talk about sleaze. All right. So anyway, this guy's like, you know, you go in there and the guy would badger people. Like in his meetings, if somebody didn't make their quota, he'd like humiliate them, you know, in front of everybody. Like, what's your problem, you know? All right, so that was terrifying. The guy was terrifying, you know. I didn't, but I was still so, young, new at the thing. I was exempt from that at this point. So, all right, so I go out on my own, first time, and first day, I make like $80. I clear like $80. I put in a lot of hours, like 10, 11 hours, but I made like $80. I was making 100 a week at Fast Check. So I made 80 on my first day. I was like, all right, I like this. This isn't so bad. It's hard work and it's humiliating and I feel kind of guilty. Hey, you'd never believe what those numbskulls back at the warehouse. They double stocked my truck. Hey, you want to sell some of this? I mean, you want to buy some of this, you know, basically stolen meat? Come on out to the truck. I'll show you. I got a whole freezer full of stolen meat that I stole from my employer. Both of us will profit from this deal. You know, felt kind of guilty about that. But I made $80 and was like, hell yeah, you know. So then the next day I go out and I make $19 or something like that. And I worked even longer, you know. I worked like 10 hours at least. And I made like $19. I cleared like $19, right? So that's $1.90 an hour. It's worse than Fast Check. That's what Fast Check wanted to pay me, right? The government wouldn't allow. So I was like, I don't know what the difference was. I did exactly the same thing the second day. So that wasn't any good. And then the third day, I didn't make my quota. I didn't make it. I think I sold two, and I had to sell three. And when they say that quota quickly escalates up from one to three, I think it happens in like I think the first day your quota was one. Second day, your quota was two, and the third day, quota was three, and then it caps out at three, if I remember correctly. All right. So I sold two, I think, and so I didn't make my quota. So I was like, what happens now? They said, you got to buy. So I had to buy the cheapest thing they had, which was onion rings, this big box of onion rings, right? I think it was like, I don't remember how much it was. It was like, it feels like my cost was like $18. I don't know, it seems kind of high when I think. It was, you know, it wasn't as costly as those ribeyes and all that stuff, but it was not cheap, you know? You know, so I had to buy this box of onion rings because it was the cheapest thing that they had, right? And I noticed they had a shitload of onion rings stocked in the warehouse, you know, back there. And I was like, why? Is that a popular item? No, I think they have those because they know the salesmen are going to have to buy them, you know? So I took this box of onion rings home, put it in the freezer at my house, you know, my mom's freezer. And, you know, and then went out there the next day, you know, worked 10, 11 hours. And, you know, didn't make my quota. I had to buy more onion rings. Next thing you know, I'm like, the entire freezer of my mom's refrigerator is like packed out with onion rings. My mom's like, what is going on? We can't live this way. What is going on? You can't do this. You can't fill our, I mean, she's like making onion rings for every meal. You know, she's trying to get rid of them. Like having it with breakfast to be like eggs and onion, eggs and onion rings. She's trying to get rid of some of this excess inventory that we have now. Next thing you know, I'm like putting it in my grandmother's freezer across the street. I have to keep buying these onion rings, and I'm losing money. I'm buying gas every day. I'm driving all over the state of West Virginia. I'm being berated by this Czechoslovakian car bastard. And he's calling me a choir boy or whatever. He's like, why are you not making your quota and all this stuff? I'm like, oh, my God. You know, and all the time I'm thinking about, I've got to get back with Kelly. You know, that's the only thing. I was like single-mindedly thinking about that. I don't give two shits about this meat salesman thing. So, but, you know, I didn't want to lose my job again. And, I kept thinking about that day one. Why was that so successful? And every other day was not so successful. In fact, it got worse and worse and worse. Finally, they told me, you know, you're going to have to be reskilled. This isn't working. I mean, you know, you're not making your quota. You're terrible at your, you know, we're going to send you out with somebody else. Not the original guy. You know, we're going to send you out with another guy who's, you know, he does a really good job too. We're gonna send you out for a couple days with him. You're not gonna be earning, but you know, at least you won't be losing money. You know, so we're gonna send you out with him, and then we'll see how it goes. So I go out with this guy. You know, they send me out, and we're up in these towns. I don't know where it feels like you're going back into the 1940s, like way up in these, you know, hollers and stuff. I don't know where we are. You know, it's coal mining country up in there, and you know we're going around, and you know, he's selling stuff. He's got a few people that he, you know, sells to. And, you know, he's like, and I'm just like, oh, God. You know, I'm like depressed. I mean, I'm not, you know, everything's gone to shit. You know, I got nothing going on. I can't even sell meat door to door, you know. And he's like, man, we're sitting in this fast food place having lunch. He goes, you need to get your shit together. He goes, you're moping around here. How do you think you're going to? He goes, what is your issue? What is the problem? He goes, nobody's going to buy anything off of you the way you're moping around and like, you know, sad sack. You're just a sad sack. I said, well, what's the problem? Well, number one is I'm selling meat. That's the first bullet point. Is I'm driving all over the state of West Virginia trying to sell meat out of a pickup truck. I mean, that's number one. He goes, that's the job. You gotta buck up, brother. You know, you can't just be moping around. I said, I couldn't give two shits about this place or this stupid ass thing. I said, why don't you just leave me here? And he goes, no. Come on. You got to snap out of it. You know, we'll get through this. And I said, hey, just leave me. You know, I couldn't care less. You know, just I don't know where we're at. Shit stain, West Virginia or something. I don't know where we were. I guess I was like, I'm done. This is bullshit. I said, what are we doing? Look at us. We're selling meat. Trying to sell meat out of a pickup truck way up in the hollers of West Virginia. He goes, get it together, man. You know, he's trying to give me, he was trying to do a pep talk and a tough love type thing. And I was like, whatever. So, you know, and I would call my girlfriend, I'd call Kelly, you know, we weren't even together anymore. Like Saturday, maybe, you know, we could maybe like go to lunch or something, you know, I don't know. I just talk. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. Just to see each other, you know, maybe, you know, I don't think that would be a good idea, Jeff. And I just feel like, oh, I'd be calling her from the road, from like payphones. I was a pathetic husk of a man. And, you know, and this guy's like, what is wrong with you? So are you serious? Do you need a list of things? So I was getting to the point where it was like, you know, I was beaten down and I was like, whatever. And then, but now I was getting a little, you know, getting a little irritated. And so then they send me back out. You know, they send me back out. Oh, by the way, before I had to go out and get reskilled, as they called it, I sold a couple boxes to some lady in up in Charleston. And the next day I went to the meeting, the early morning you know, military lineup with old Check Car. And this guy comes over to me after the meeting. He goes, hey, did you sell to a woman up on whatever street in Charleston? I said, yeah. He goes, that's my customer. I said, what? What do you mean? He goes, she's my customer. So whatever you made off of that, you need to give it to me. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, what I just said. He was like getting really aggressive. He goes, what I just said, whatever you made off of her, it's my money, and I want that money. You know, he's being, you know, he's getting threatening. He goes, you can't be poaching other. I said, how the hell am I supposed to know? He goes, unless they tell me. I mean, I don't know. How am I supposed to know? And he goes, give me the money. So I was like, whatever. You know, I was so destroyed emotionally. I was like, all right, here you go. You know, so even the other salesmen were bullying me, you know. This thing sucked, you know. This thing was terrible, you know. The whole thing sucked. And so then I went through this retraining. I said, just leave me here. Leave me up in this mountain town where it's like 1946. I couldn't give two shits, you know. So he goes, no. So they turned me free again. I went to Morgantown this day, you know, my first day back after they gave me back my truck, right? I went to Parkersburg. Did I say Morgantown? No, I was in Parkersburg. And I sold two cases to this woman at a car dealership. And she seemed like she was excited. She was like, yeah, she was on board still to buy some of this stolen meat, you know? So, I mean, the stuff was good. It was high quality. It's nothing. I didn't feel any guilt about selling shit meat or anything. I mean, the stuff was really high end. So when I sold stuff, it was priced. It was expensive, but I don't guess it was too expensive. I mean, it was normal price. All right. So I sold to this woman. She bought two cases of it. She said she was going to have some kind of like giant family cookout or something. So she was all excited. I thought, this is good. This is a good turn of events, you know, early in the day. And I've already sold two cases, you know. I just have to sell one more. I already made a little bit of money, you know. So I pull out of the parking lot of this car dealership. And I'm driving down the road. And for whatever reason, I change lanes without looking. You know, I change lanes without looking. I mean, for one thing, there's this giant box on the back of the truck. You can't see out the rearview mirror, this big freezer. And, you know, I change lanes and I strip out the entire side of this expensive, you know, it was like a Trans Am or a Corvette or a, you know, one of those things, a Camaro or something. It was like perfectly, you know, it was like, looked like somebody just washed it and detailed it, you know. And I just ripped out the entire side of this thing with this rolling meat buggy that I'm driving, you know. Just, and it's this woman, this girl, you know, jumps out. She's like some country, you know, she's real country, you know. She'd kick my ass. I mean, she would just like snap my neck, you know, if she wanted to. She goes, what are you doing? You know, she's like yelling at me, just instantly just like hollering at me, you know. And I'm like, it's my fault, you know. I'm a defeated man. I mean, I'm completely defeated now. If the universe gives me this small little win where I sell these two cases to this woman at the car dealership, instantly has to be corrected by some devastating situation. So she's like, she goes, what are you, you know, screaming at me. And I'm like, well, it's my fault. Next thing you know, the police are there. Feels like seconds. There's people on the sidewalks, you know, rubbernecking, seeing what's going on. I got my, you know, now my bashed in meat wagon and I destroyed her like Camaro or whatever. And the police are over there. They're like, what happened? I said, I changed. It's my fault. It's 100%. You know, I'm just, I don't know. You know, piece of shit. I'm just a piece of shit. I don't know. And guys, like both of them, like the woman who was driving the car and the cop were like, all right, now don't be so hard on yourself. No, I'm a loser. I'm a piece of shit. I'm just a walking dog turd, piece of shit loser, you know. Like, come on, buddy, buck up. Like the cop and the woman who I'd crashed into were both giving, like, all right. So then I just went back. I was like, I called old Czechoslovakian car. I said I crushed in your truck. It's all bashed in. And I'm done. I think I'm done, you know. He goes, you're not going anywhere. You owe me money. He goes, you're crashing my you damaged my truck, and you think you're just going to walk away? I don't think so. I said, you can file a lawsuit. You can have me arrested. You guys can take me out back and beat my ass. Whatever. I mean, whatever course of action you want to take. I'm not going back out 1 minute in that rolling meat buggy. So you can take that thing, and you guys can come over here to my house and beat me down, you know, in my yard, if that's what you want to do. Or you can file a lawsuit, you know, whatever. I don't give two shits. You guys can go fuck yourself, you know. And, you know, so I never heard another word from him, you know. But every once in a while, I'd see that guy driving around that stupid car. And like this, you know, a twinge of like, well, one thing, fear. I didn't want him to see me, you know. And also just like, oh, God. Oh. Also, I forgot about the, there's a couple things. Like there was this one point where I was selling, I think I was in Huntington. And I was selling to these people, or I was trying to sell something. And it was like a daughter and a mother, and the daughter was like roughly my age, super cute, and the mother, they were rich. You could tell that they were like, they had money. And the mother said, told the daughter, all right, go up and see what he has, and if there's anything, go ahead and buy it, you know, feel free to buy it. I'm like, yeah, I got one on the hook here. So we get up there, that we climb up on the back of the truck, we lift the lid on the freezer, and I'm showing her stuff, jabbering on, probably full of enthusiasm because I think I've got a sale, you know. And I say something, and I don't know what it is, but everything changed. You know, whatever I said the wrong thing. I was a terrible salesman, you know. I said something, and she was like, everything, her whole demeanor changed, and she was like, I think we're good. And she just left. So I don't know. I don't know what I did. That's one of those things that haunts me. I'm like, wonder what I said. I don't know. I was just jabbering. You're supposed to, at some point, you're supposed to just shut up, you know. You know, the deal, the hook is in, you know. You just shut the hell up and just let this thing play out. I didn't know. I had no skills. I didn't know anything. But I somehow ruined that thing. And then there was another one. This is even more painful. I don't know where I was at. I don't know where these towns are. But I think it feels like I was in some insurance salesman's office. And there was this guy in there. He ended up buying something off of me. But I had to sell it to him for cost. So I made zero. I made nothing. But that was better than buying another box of those onion rings. Jeff, we can't live this way. We can't stop bringing these onion rings into our home. We don't have the room. We can't eat them fast enough. You're bringing them into the house faster than we can eat them, you know. So at least I didn't have to buy any more onion rings, but I didn't make any money. I'd sell this thing at cost. And he was like, you know, he was like, so then I had all these samples in there. I brought in like a case of this and a case of that just to show him what it was. He ended up buying something off of me at cost. And then he was like, I was leaving and I forgot my the samples. He goes, hey, genius, you know, hey, genius, you want to take those other boxes over there, or are you going to leave those for me? I said, okay, sorry. So he goes, as I'm walking out, he goes, man, you're a hell of a salesman. You know, if I had an opening right now, I'd hire you, man. I've never seen a salesman, you know, just like denigrating me, you know, mocking me. I'm already down. You know, I'm selling meat and seafood. I don't know shit. I don't know anything. I don't even know what a scallop. It's just all phony baloney. Like, I don't even know what a scallop was. Oh, these are Gulf, you know, Gulf of Mexico scallops, you know. Like, I don't know what the shit that is. So I'm already down. I'm just a mental, you know, I'm just in a mental anguish at all times. Then this guy's like, hey, genius. You know, I wish I had a salesman position because you're one hell of a, oh, God, people suck. Oh, my God. So the whole thing was terrible. The whole thing, it lasted maybe like 3 weeks total. I ended up paying more money than I earned. It sucked, you know, and yeah, one of the worst, darkest periods. Just so you know, Kelly and I did get back together for maybe like another year, maybe 2 years. I can't remember. And then we broke up for good. And, you know, I have nothing but fond memories of her. You know, she's, you know, I have nothing bad to say about her. We had a, we had a good run, and not very good about breakups. Don't do well with those. And that one was the worst of them all because it was the first one. And then I ended up selling meat. You see? See how these things go? You spiral down, down, down. I think those things are kind of illegal now. You can't even have those. I don't think you're allowed to even sell that meat out of the back of the trucks anymore. So anyway, that's the story. Hope you enjoyed it. I will be back soon over at Patreon. That's a place you can go and support my efforts if you're interested. That's patreon.com/JeffK. That's Patreon, patreon.com/JeffK. Sign up for a $4 or more monthly donation. They call it a patronage, whatever. Whatever you call it. But if you sign up, sign up for a $4 donation for me, $4 per month, it helps me, it supports my efforts, you'll get, as a thank you, an extra episode of the podcast every week, not every month, not every once in a while, every week. That's my way of saying thank you. So $4 will do it. It's greatly appreciated, and if you want to do it today. Patreon.com/JeffK. And if you want to be a part of the show, you can call our hotline, 570-290-8151. Again, 570-290-8151. 24 hours a day. It's a voicemail system. Leave a comment. Ask a question. Make a suggestion, whatever you want to do. Call it 24 hours a day, and I'll almost certainly use it in a future episode. And if you want to send me an email, that can be done at surfreportpod@gmail.com. All right, we're at the end of this thing. I hope you enjoyed this. I'll see you soon over on the Patreon side. Until then, you guys have yourselves a fine, fine day. I'll see ya. Bye. Smashed down like some spent cigarette butt underneath the heel of a fat man.